Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, February 8th, 2024. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Chris Colby, author of The Homebrew Recipe Bible, Methods of Modern Home Brewing, and How to Brew Seltzer, joins me to formulate the recipe for a small batch Belgian single. We also taste my attempt at an oat malt stout that we formulated on this show. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. Thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. Financial supporters have already seen the video episode that I'm planning to make public on Friday. It's the one about Steve Wilkes's Old School Pale Ale, a British-inspired pale ale that follows the traditional hopping schedule that we used to stick to religiously when we first started homebrewing. There were a bunch of rules back then that we dared not violate, or else we would ruin our beer. It turns out that wasn't true. But the good thing about this hop schedule is that it still works. The beer turned out very nicely. You know, nothing fancy, but doggone it, you know, a lot of the time that's what I'm looking for. Steve and I are planning to get together at the end of the week to shoot more videos. Maybe ambitious, but I've got four things ready for him to taste. My oat malt stout, my Fresca Chandler, the mead kit for the veneer that I got from Groenfell.com, and the gingerbread wit that Matt Giovannisi of Brew Cabin brewed as the result of a recipe development show that you heard right here. Matt and I worked with Josh Secor from Gambit Brewing to formulate that one, you may remember. That's a lot of things to sample and talk about in one day. It's, like I say, maybe ambitious. The good thing is that Matt made a video postcard about his beer, so maybe we'll shoot that show last and have him do most of the work talking about how the beer was brewed. And I can just stand there and sip and nod my head and smile, and maybe Steve can talk. I already have the ingredients for the beer that Chris and I are going to formulate in this show that you're about to listen to. I decided to use leftover hops from the beer fridge for this one. There's not a lot of bitterness or hop character for the style, and it is a small batch, so I can cobble together enough pellets for the beer. I'm tempted. You know, I got a bunch of those little bags, little leftover bags in the freezer. Every now and then I smell the hops, and if they still smell good, I keep them and look and see if they're green. I'm tempted to do like a fruit salad kind of beer and use all those leftover hops that I have, just to clean out the freezer. I remember doing that a long time ago, and I think that beer turned out pretty well. I usually try to formulate recipes so that, I don't have those partial packets of hops left over, but, it seems to happen anyway. I got the ingredients for this beer from our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave of HighGravityBrew.com. They have a great deal going on right now, specifically for listeners of this show, and Desiree says that y'all are taking advantage of it. So thanks for doing that, and it's good for you, too. Right now, if you use the code BB10, that's BB10, on highgravitybrew.com, when you check out, you can get 10% off beer ingredients. That's everything under the beer ingredients menu on highgravitybrew.com, except for, it turns out, the Build Your Own Beer page. So my bad there. And Desiree says she's working to make that happen, too. So just pick out your ingredients from the general site, including beer kits, by the way. Put them into your cart, and when you use the code BB10, BB10, you'll save 10% off beer ingredients. BB10, that's two better than BB8 for Star Wars fans. You can't use it in conjunction with other offers, but still, what a deal. And of course, when you're on highgravitybrew.com, you can always check out the Warthog Electric Brewing Solutions to take the pain out of propane. Use BB10. To save 10% off beer ingredients on family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. That's highgravitybrew.com. Okay, I may be getting absent-minded, but a few times lately, my brew days haven't gone exactly as planned. However, due to my vast experience in making brewing mistakes, I've been able to learn from them and correct the situation and come out with a beer that's still dang tasty. Let's see if this is one of those times. Chris Colby, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, James. Thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome. Thanks for coming on the show. We're going to sip a beer and then we're going to talk about a beer.
Sounds like a plan and a half.
Now, this is a beer. This beer that we're going to sip is another brown one. I think, you know, we're about 50% on the recipe development show on brown beers, brown and or amber beers. But, you know, it's okay if they're good. This one is the one that we formulated with the help of beer author and historian Peter Simons.
Yeah.
It's an oat malt stout. And it didn't turn out the way I intended. I did a couple things wrong. But maybe it's a good beer anyway. So I'm going to take a sip and you take a sip. And then I'll talk about the recipe. Okay. Now, ruminate on that while I talk about the recipe. Again,
sure.
This is a 5-gallon or 19-liter batch. I started with 6 pounds or 2.7 kilograms of Maris Otter, 3 pounds or 1.4 kilograms of oat malt, 10 ounces or 284 grams of brown malt, 8 ounces or 227 grams of 20 Lovibond Crystal, 4 ounces or 113 grams of chocolate malt. And to the water I added, in addition to my, you know, I used my filtered water and then used the calculator to, I think, use a profile that's like a brown ale or brown beer. I added 2 grams of calcium chloride, 4 grams of Epsom salt, and 2 grams of gypsum. I intended to mash for 90 minutes at 152 degrees Fahrenheit. I set the temperature, and then I've been lazy lately with my Warthog brew in a bag system. It comes with a pump, which will recirculate, you know, wort from under the basket, and then spray it on top of the mash so that you can maintain, you know, a constant mash temperature that way. Well, the temperature probe is in the bottom underneath the basket, and so I've been fooling myself thinking that the temperature of the mash was the temperature of the temperature probe. But I found out it was windy and cold on the day that I brewed, and so I started out actually with water at 161 degrees Fahrenheit or 71.7 C, 8 gallons or 30 liters, because I wanted to hit that 152 degrees Fahrenheit mash rest right away. And so I did, and I did. I hit that 152 degree mash rest temperature in the very beginning. I came back like half an hour later, and I had lost like 10 degrees Fahrenheit because I wasn't using the pump. I was just stirring. And I was being lazy, and I screwed up. If I had used the pump, because I've known from other experiences in brewing in the past, if I had used the pump and sprayed the recirculated the wort as the system is designed to do, I think it would have maintained the mash temperature that I had desired. So we actually did, instead of a constant rest at 152 degrees Fahrenheit or 66.7 C, we did something like a ramping temperature rising mash rest. So anyway, that was my first mistake. So I collected my wort at the beginning of a 60-minute boil. I added 7 grams of Victoria's Secret or Vic's Secret at 21.5% alpha acid, and that's just leftovers that I had in the freezer to get us to our target IBUs, which I've forgotten now. I think it was like 40 or something. And then I chilled and pitched L10 Darkness from Imperial and fermented. It started out at 1038. Final gravity 1010 for an ABV of only 3.7%. But I got it in the keg, and I was like, I kegged it, and then later in the day, I went out to the beer fridge, and I looked, and I said, what are these 2 ounces of cluster out here doing in the beer fridge? I had forgotten I was going to dry hop in the fermenter, but I forgot. So I dry hopped in the keg for 3 days. So I screwed up twice, but hopefully it'll be a drink. It's not the beer that it's – I don't think it's going to be the beer that we intended, but hopefully it'll be a beer that is at least – drinkable and enjoyable. So saying all that, what do you think?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to me like an oatmeal stout, which was our it's like a like a dark amber English ale sort of thing. You know, and it works
out
trying,
you're trying not to say brown ale.
Yeah, I'm sort of trying not to say brown ale. But it, yeah, to be an oatmeal stout, for one thing, how much roasted malt did we have in there? Like chocolate, roasted barley?
4 ounces, roasted. 4 ounces of chocolate malt, 10 ounces of brown malt. And then, you know, 8 ounces of 20 Love of Bond Crystal. Now, we used oat malt and not oat like,
right.
You know.
Like flaked oats.
Flaked
yeah.
oats or unmalted oats. So, you know, that probably converted better than if it were, you know, unmalted maybe.
Maybe a little. The beer is highly attenuated. Like it's drier than I would expect for an oatmeal stout.
Yeah, it's not very
but
chewy.
But as an amber ale kind of thing. Or God help us, a brown ale.
So is it at least drinkable? Is it at least palatable?
Oh, yeah. It's, I mean, it's got, there's a little bit of roast in the aroma. And there's a little bit of hops. And, I mean, it doesn't taste like there's any fermentation faults. You know, it's not contaminated. Yeah, it's a totally drinkable beer. Just tell people it's an ESB or something.
Yeah, it's less than 4% alcohol, which I think.
Oh yeah, it's like a bitter.
We were shooting for higher ABV as well. I think so. I don't remember what our original brief was, but so I think it's lighter in gravity. It's lighter on the mouthfeel than I anticipated. But, you know, like you said, I mean, I think it's good. I mean, I served it. We had some friends over the other night, and one friend who is not generally a beer drinker had, you know, a couple, 3 pints and said,
wow.
You know, he liked it quite a bit. In his words, this is going down pretty easy. So it's good, and it's a beer flavored beer. You know, it is a traditional tasting style kind of a thing. Although,
yeah.
You know, I don't know where to put it. So I think it is. I hesitate to say a well made beer because I screwed up. But if you didn't know what went on in the background, you wouldn't think that something was wrong with it.
Yeah, if you didn't know. If you didn't tell someone this is an oatmeal stout, if you just said, here's a beer, they'd go, oh, this is pretty good.
Yeah. A lot of times in home brewing, or probably in just about anything, it's not that you screw up. It's how you compensate from when you screw up. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, you can kick save things. you can also just, I mean, I've had countless beers where something goes wrong early on and you just say, okay, this isn't going to be the beer I want, but you know, what can I do, to make it, you know, a beer that I'll drink and just, you know, not tell anyone about.
Yeah. Yeah. And I screwed up on another beer, the next beer that I brewed, I screwed up on, but I recovered. And I'll talk about that in another show. When we're Matt and Josh and I are tasting that one, but if I were a beginning home brewer, I might have gotten discouraged, or you know, I might have been on the phone with the homebrew shop saying I screwed this up, you know, I've ruined this beer. What can I do? But you know, I've screwed up enough and that I could figure out things to do.
You know, so you learned something about your brewing rig and temperatures and the pump and I tend not to worry too much about screw ups if I learn from it and then I don't do it again. If I do something wrong and it turns out bad, and then I do this exact same thing and it turns out bad again, then I'm mad at myself. I'm like, didn't you notice? Weren't you taking notes? But yeah, the occasional screw up, you know, it happens.
There was nothing wrong with the Warthog system if I had used it as it were designed. But what I did was I wanted to make sure that I was maintaining that 152 degree mash rest. So I actually took an instant read thermometer and stuck it in the mash in the top of the, you know, in with the grain in the top. And that's when I discovered, it's cold outside. It's windy. The wort is nice and, you know, the proper temperature down at the bottom, you know, but at the top of the mash, it wasn't. So, again, that was my screw up. And you know, in the summertime, when it, you know, if it's 100 degrees outside, it might not have made that much of a difference. But it was cold and, you know, it was probably in the 20s or something outside Fahrenheit. And the wind was blowing, and so it probably had a bigger impact. But if I wasn't trying to make this particular style and make it with this particular mash-driven characteristic of being, you know, more chewy, I might not have even noticed if I hadn't been, you know, taking the temperature at that time. So anyway, spoiler alert, I'm going to choose to use dry yeast for this upcoming recipe. That's because I want to underpitch it a little bit, and it's a small batch. So underpitching is usually not something that I think about when it comes to our friends and sponsors at Imperial Yeast. In fact, as you know, my stir plate is dusty because I don't use it anymore to make starters for moderate gravity 5-gallon ale batches, thanks to those 200 billion cells in each easy-to-open package of Imperial Yeast. The most recent pale ale that I brewed was actually brewed with L25 Huga from Imperial, which is a clean fermenting lager yeast. I didn't use a starter, and I pitched Huga into the 5-gallon 1050 wort, and it was done in 7 days. I pitched on brew day and kegged a week later. It turned out very nicely. So Huga is very versatile. Whether you want to brew a lager in these colder temps or even an ale like I did, L25 Huga from Imperial is a great choice. And with a recommended shelf life of 4 months, you can pick up a couple of packs and plan ahead. Ask your local homebrew store about L25 Huga, the seasonal yeast from Imperial Yeast, and check out all the dependable deliciousness from imperialyeast.com. That's imperialyeast.com. So let's talk about another beer that I can screw up.
Hooray!
Yay! what's the style that we're going to talk about today?
Well, it's almost not really even a style; it's more of a designation because we're going to talk about a beer that could be called a Trappist single. You know, like a lot of Trappist breweries brew a double or double or however you pronounce it, and a triple or a tripel, however you pronounce it. But then some of them also have a lower gravity beer that they designate a single.
I pronounce it Singel.
Singel. Sniggle.
So, but is this like the kind of an everyday drinking beer in the monastery? Is that what this is?
In Westmall, which I was lucky enough to get a tour of, that's the beer that they brew basically for the monks. Although you can also get it across the street at their tap room. And then, I don't know, in Belgium, maybe you can also buy it places. But yeah, it's meant to be lower than their higher strength beers. And yeah, it's a very sessionable beer.
Yeah, now does it have the same characteristics, the same Belgian-y characteristics as the bigger beers?
It's like I saw it described once as like a mini triple. It's like that sort of feel, you know. It triple is relatively pale, pale golden. It's got, as Belgian beers go, triples are reasonably hoppy, and this is sort of like that. This is like a pale beer. It's hoppier than most Belgian pale ales. It doesn't, it doesn't rival hazy IPAs or anything like that, but it's more hoppy than most Belgian styles, and it's very highly carbonated. The carbonation is like, it's a little less than a Hefeweizen, but it's more than the typical American craft beer, or the typical fizzy yellow water beer.
Yeah, it's interesting. Stan Hieronymus's book, Brew Like a Monk. I need to read that again. It was a really good book. But singles start out pale, then you go double, which is dark, then you go, and then you come out at triple again, and you're back light.
And then also, like, I mean, treating it like a style, I don't think is right, because if a Trappist brewery brewed a dark beer that was in lower gravity, they could call it that, because they're completely not hung up in Belgium on what a style is. There are brands of beers to them, and but not really styles. So yeah, but the Westmalle single is clear. From what I've heard, the Westleteren 6 is also clear. So there's, some precedence.
Yeah, when we interviewed Peter Brucart at New Belgium way back in the day, I said, we hope that you will help us in learning how to brew these Belgian styles. And he made a face and he reached out as if he were going to choke me. And he said, we don't brew styles. We brew, 15 minutes of pleasure or something like that. So, or we brew art or. So, style is a dirty word in Belgium, apparently. So, I'm going to do a 2.5 gallon batch of this beer. Because my kegs are full, and I want to bottle condition this. Like you said, this is, if it's going to be a higher carbonation,
Easier to bottle condition than to crank the,
right,
CO2 way up on a keg.
right. And I'm hoping that I can get away with, because I don't have a lot of Belgian, thick Belgian bottles. So I'm hoping I can get away with like using standard, 12-ounce beer bottles, and instead of four of those little aspirin, pills or tablets to, of priming sugar. Do you think I could get away with like using five? Or maybe could I? Do you think I could go up to six? I don't want to do bottle bombs.
No, I'd go, if you're priming it with little sugar pills, if four is normal, average craft beer carbonation, I'd go with five.
Okay.
I'd have to do the math on that, but it'd be ballpark.
Just to be safe.
And then you could probably get away with ordinary beer bottles. I mean, I wouldn't store the beer above, priceless art collection or anything.
I'll
I
stay.
know all of the priceless art you have laying
Yeah,
around your
I'll
house.
keep it away from our mayonnaise and our Monets and our mayonnaise, just out of the fridge. Oh no, I'd have to have it'd be better in the fridge next to the mayonnaise. So you got your spreadsheet out? I'm talking quickly because you said you got a turkey in the oven. I don't want you to burn your bird,
Oh, don't
so to
worry.
speak.
Burn my bird.
So 2.5 gallons, or what would that be? And that would be what's half of 19 liters.
Yeah, 9.5.
Is it going to be fairly simple, this recipe, since it's a, just a single.
Yeah, it really should be simple. Like an overly complicated recipe or procedures, I don't think in any way. Like, I mean, this beer isn't going to be, super authentic because I doubt either one of us are going to become Trappist monks anytime soon.
I'm working on the hairstyle,
Yeah, there you
but
go.
and the waistline. But
Some days I'd like to live somewhere without people.
or at least people that don't talk
Yeah.
to you. Well, I work at home, so I've got that already. So, but you wrote up a cheat sheet for me, and you said step one on how to brew a Trappist single is number one, become a Trappist monk and found a monastery. There is actually a monastery in Arkansas, and I'm blanking on the name, but there is a little brewery at the monastery, and they do things like they collect honey and it'll come to me in a minute, and I'll interrupt you inappropriately when I come up with the name. And I've contacted them on several occasions, and I guess the guy didn't want to talk to me about his
To the
beer.
outsiders.
If you live in Arkansas and you're familiar with them down there, put in a good word. Anyway, what's our base malt?
That's a good question. I mean, there's variables. The core malt is going to be just Pilsner malt because it's a pale beer, and Pilsner malt is, super common. And you could go with, I mean, there are Belgian Pilsner malts, and of course that would work well. Also a German Pilsner malt. And you could brew a beer like this with having Pilsner malt be 100% of the grist. You're probably going to want to, though, because the beer is supposed to be dry. You're probably, dry and sort of, at least if the mini triple description is on par, you'd want to put some cane sugar, maybe up to 20% of the weight, of the grist. And you could, yeah, so Pilsner malt and cane sugar, like that would be a really simple grist and it would work well. And you can also, I mean, I know there's a lot of homebrewers who like using like Belgian candy sugar or fancier sugars, and you could do that too, but there's no real reason to use anything other than cane sugar.
And especially since I'm going to be using, just doing half of a batch size. I don't want to buy,
Right.
a whole pound of,
Yeah, fancy schmancy
fancy
sugar. Yeah.
schmancy sugar. Subiaco Abbey is the name of the place, by the
There we go.
way. So what about wheat? Do we want to put some wheat in there?
I'd like to. I mean, I think that might not be traditional, but then, I don't know. I think it could be, especially with the higher carbonation, like a little bit of wheat, like maybe, I don't know, 20% of the grist, equal to the amount of cane sugar. That could be a good option. A little bit of a, add a, probably a little bit of cloudiness, not a lot. And just, I think personal opinion, but I think highly carbonated beers that have wheat in them taste good.
And also, would that be a buffer against, since this is a relatively lower gravity beer with sugar, would the wheat be kind of a buffer to it drying out too much or being perceived as being too dry?
Yeah, I think the proteins in wheat malt might lend a little heft to the mouthfeel. Yeah, I definitely think that's, yeah, right on.
Okay.
And then, I mean, the other thing, some people like to add, Cara something or other to everything they do, but that's really not needed in this. I mean, if you absolutely must add something, make it like a tiny amount of Cara pills, like 3%. But you don't really need, I mean, if you're going with Pilsner malt and cane sugar to dry it out, adding any kind of Cara malt is working in opposition to what you're doing.
Okay.
Something like Cara foam might be okay because that's, obviously designed to boost foam, which would, in a high gravity or a high carbonated beer, that would work well.
But wheat, in my experience, wheat already has an effect on that, or in my opinion, or at least my experience. So shall we start putting some tax on the board? Should we shoot for? You said shoot for like a 4 to 6% ABV. Why don't we shoot for 6%? And that way, if I mess up and don't get the don't get my extraction, and it comes out at 4, I can be like, oh, I meant to do that. Let's plan for a 6%, and then just see what happens on my little stovetop. You know, brewing
so
a bag.
Start with some
thingy.
Start with some Pilsner, 2.5 gallons.
I'm looking forward to this. I don't think I've brewed a Belgian beer, especially one with sugar, in a long time. I used to have a triple recipe that I would make often. It was good, but people didn't think that it was authentic. But I liked it. There's just something about brewing with sugar that I find, you know, kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's the ratio of like – you said you use about the same amount of wheat as cane sugar?
Yeah. I want it to be about maybe 60% Pilsner malt and then 20 cane sugar, 20 wheat. And it doesn't have to be exactly that either. Okay, for 2 gallons – if we went with 4 pounds of Pilsner malt and 0.5 pound each of cane sugar and wheat malt, that's 80% Pilsner malt and then 10% each for cane sugar and wheat malt.
Okay.
That's not bad. Let me just let's see if we can bump this up a bit. And that comes out at right about 6%.
So that's 2.5 gallons?
2.5 gallon recipe, yeah.
Okay.
Or here's another one. This might be a little bit better, a little closer to what we originally thought. 3.5 pounds of Pilsner malt and 3/4 pound of cane sugar and 3/4 pound of wheat malt puts us at a gravity of 1062 for an ABG of right around 6.
Yep.
Attenuation is going to be a little bit better. So, yeah, that's actually – okay, we're actually closer to 6.8 ABV.
I bet you my efficiency is not going to be as good as your spreadsheet. If history dictates, I think that's on these smaller batches. I think that's what we've come across. So we'll be good. And what about mashing?
I'd go for a single infusion mash here, and something, you know, since it's supposed to be highly attenuating, something on the low range. I mean, the fact that it's already a small beer and also has cane sugar in it doesn't, you know, you don't need to step mash for to get the absolute lowest, the highest amount of attenuation and dryness. So, but something single infusion mash would work great. Anything, 148 to 150. I'd probably do 150 just because it doesn't, it's going to be a dry beer, and that's going to be accentuated by the sugar in there. That the initial somewhat low gravity, I guess 6%, so I don't know. And also the carbonation. So yeah, 150 would be a great.
So 65 C. So
yeah.
Standard. Standard mash. And then hops.
Yeah, this is a pretty simple call here. Just some sort of noble hop, Saaz or Tettnang or Hallertau would be great. Or anything relatively neutral, especially for bittering hops, would neutral and sort of higher ABV would be good because you could shoot for about 30 IBUs, which is... for a Belgian beer, relatively high, but for compared to like an IPA, that's about half of that. But so bittering hops, anything noble or anything neutral. And then for the aroma hops, you would want something, that was distinctly like a noble hop.
Okay.
Again, like Saaz, Tettnang, Hallertau, or anything... reasonably comparable to that.
I think I've got a bunch of partial bags of hops, partial 1 ounce samples in the freezer that are still fresh and I can call on. So I'll call an audible on that on the day. So just a standard boil.
60 to 90 minutes. You've got... Yeah, with a 6% beer, you should have enough to boil for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Enough.
Now, you know, usually I would go with something like a B48 triple double from Imperial, but this is a, you know, half a batch, and usually on these size batches I go for something dry, and so I was looking on the highgravitybrew.com, and they've got Saf Brew BE256. So is this something that we would want to under pitch?
You're going to want to have some sort of yeast character in it, to be best, not super overwhelming, but you know, you're going to want it to taste, you know, like a Belgian beer. So yeah, any Belgian strain, I mean, just they all are, you know, unique and idiosyncratic. And I would say, you know, if you have a particular Trappist brewery you like, you know, look around and see if you can't find a yeast strain that purports to be, you know, the same as that strain. If not, just any Belgian yeast that you've used before or other people have used and reported good results on it. And then just, yeah, you know, aerate the wort like you should. Ferment at, you know, I would look at the recommended temperature range and shoot for sort of the middle high range of the recommended range. Cause like, that's going to bring out the esters, but not, not super overdo it, which you don't want. And then also, yeah, if you cut back a little bit on your pitching rate at 6%, yeah, you can't cut back too much. Cause you know, you want the fermentation to go in an orderly fashion, but you know, dial it back a little bit from the usual recommendation and should work well.
And since this is, you know, like a packet is designed for a, you know, a 5 gallon, 19 liter batch, maybe if I, you know, pitch half of that packet in there in the 2.5 gallon batch.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Probably do good.
Shake it up. Make sure it's all.
Shake it up. And then make sure it's nice and carbonated.
Yeah.
It sounds delicious.
It's simple. The actual Trappist single that I had at Westmall was just amazing, you know, in the midst of having all, because we were drinking just, you know, insanely high alcohol beers the whole time there. And when I had that one, I was like, oh, this is nice. This is a little different.
Only 6%. Ah.
Yeah.
So was that your, was Westmall your favorite place?
I went there and Canteon and some newer breweries that I, you know, I don't even know if they exist anymore. Probably, but yeah, it was, Westmall was, yeah, incredible. It's, you know, you think about like, oh, it's in a monastery and like, there's going to be some guys with hoods and, you know, like a little, you know, I imagine it is sort of like old timey brewery, but the main brewery floors, you walk in there and it's like the size of a stadium. Oh. You know, it's enormous. And there's these robots, you know, these big robot arms that are like moving things from one place to the other. It's all automated. You know, it's a state of the art. And like the monks aren't brewing the beer. They have, you know, workers to do that. Hmm. But, you know, an amazing brewery. And it's weird. They have a warm conditioning room for the bottle conditioning.
Mm.
And it's, you go there and it's like that scene at the end of the Raiders of the Lost Ark where it's a warehouse and it's just endless. There's like pallets and pallets of beer stacked to this, you know, a high ceiling and like the aisles just go on forever. It's like they're making a lot of beer there.
If you drink too much, your face melts off.
Yeah. So
don't look directly at the beer.
Yeah.
So do they distribute now? I mean, back in the day, couldn't you only get it at the place across the street or what? And there was bootleg. People would like.
West Flatiron.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Westmall used to be available here in Texas. I haven't seen it for the longest time. I don't know if, you know, maybe my beer store just doesn't carry it, but yeah, the double and the triple, or however you pronounce it, used to be available in the States. And it's, wow, it's solid beer. I mean,
Well, that sounds like fun. I'm looking forward to it. Because, like I say, it's been a long time since I've brewed a Belgian style beer, and they are tasty. And it would be a good beer. This would be a good beer to head into spring, you know, when it's warming up a little bit. Fingers crossed. So what's happening in the gardening world, in the beer and gardening journal world? It's down there in Texas, and where you are. It's about time to start planting stuff.
Yeah, I'm gonna plant tomatoes and peppers. I thought later today, maybe, or maybe this weekend. And they'll be, grown indoors under lights, of course, at the very beginning. But, looking forward to getting them out there in the garden in maybe early April. So planting time from seed is now. And I've got I'm hoping my milkweeds return. They should. And I still got a lot of decisions to make about what to plant. I added to my poison garden, and I'm growing pennyroyal this year. And also I just planted a bunch of foxglove, and every year I plant Datura. And I've got oh I had I planted successfully grew Atropa belladonna last year, and I've got a ton of seeds, so I'm gonna grow some more Atropa belladonna because that's an awesome plant.
You have an interesting life, Chris Colby. Well, excellent. I will send you the Belgianish single when I get it done, and
That's awesome.
hopefully it'll be closer to the target than the oat malt stout.
I think the secret to brewing this is just really because it's a simple recipe, it's a simple procedure. It's like just don't try to fancy anything up. Sometimes the best, like I'm cooking turkey today, and we were talking about spatchcocking and all that. Sometimes it's the best is just take the damn turkey, stuff it in the oven, and wait till it's done. I've had some amazing turkeys that way that I've done the spatchcocking and grilling at high temperatures or roasting it at, and I've done the I did for a long time the like stand it up on a beer can, like beer can chicken, except it's a Foster's can. And that works good too. But sometimes just put it in a roasting dish, crank up the heat, boom.
There you go. All right, Chris. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
I'm talking here. Thanks again to Chris. I'm looking forward to this beer, something delicious and bright to bring us into thinking about spring and warmer temperatures. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com. Just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Specials, goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Till then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.